Hi, and welcome to Finding Your Way Through Therapy, a proud member of the Sitecraft Network. The goal of this podcast is to demystify therapy, what can happen in therapy, and the wide array of conversations you can have in and about therapy. Through personal experiences, guests will talk about therapy, their experiences with it, and how psychology and therapy are present in many places in their lives, with lots of authenticity and a touch of humor. Here is your host, Steve Bisson.
Hello, nous sommes en onde. We are on air. You can see the sign behind me if you're on YouTube. If not, I'm just pointing at nothing according to those on the pod and listening to just the audio of the podcast. I'm Steve Bisson. If you haven't listened to episode 173, please go back and listen to it. Abby Westgate was an amazing guest, had a lot of insight in regards to the work she does, as well as the work she used to do in regards to being a UK sergeant in the police. But it was a good interview. Episode 174 will be with Stephanie Cohen. Stephanie Cohen contacted me and she wanted to be on the podcast. I was so excited to have her because it's a little bit of a different thing. She's worked with families for over 30 years and stress positive parenting strategies. Over the years, she helped a lot of kids face their fear of dogs. And she put it a few years ago in a book called Overcoming Your Child's Fear of Dogs. In addition to the book, she helps the parents kind of like do the right thing in order to change that. And because sometimes it's not good. And she's going to talk about systematic desensitization, among other things. Stay tuned to know what that is. Together with her, she has a dog that helps her out now. And together with her dog, she has done presentations at schools, scout troops, humane education, and even at dog places so that people stop being fearful of dogs. But here is the interview. But first, a word from our sponsor. Getfree.ai. Yes, you've heard me talk about it previously in other episodes, but I'm going to talk about it again because Getfree.ai is just a great service. Imagine being able to pay attention to your clients all the time. Instead of writing notes and making sure that the note's going to sound good and how are you going to write that note and things like that. Getfree.ai liberates you from making sure that you're writing what the client is saying, because it is keeping track of what you're saying and will create after the end of every session a progress note. But it goes above and beyond that. Not only does it create a progress note, it also gives you suggestions for goals, gives you even a mental status if you've asked questions around that, as well as being able to write a letter for your client to know what you talked about. So that's the great, great thing. It saves me time, it saves me a lot of aggravation, and it just speeds up the progress note process so well. And for $99 a month, I know that that's nothing. That's worth my time. That's worth my money. You know, the best part of it too is that if you want to go and put in the code Steve50 when you get the service, at the checkout code is Steve50, you get $50 off your first month. And if you get a whole year, you save a whole 10% for the whole year. So again, Steve50 at checkout for getfree.ai will get you $50 off for the first month. And like I said, get a full year, get 10% off. Get freed from writing notes, get freed from always scribbling while you're talking to a client, and just paying attention to your client. So they win out, you win out, everybody wins. And I think that this is the greatest thing. And if you're up to a point where you got to change a treatment plan, well, the goals are generated for you. So getfree.ai, code Steve50 to save $50 on your first month. Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 174 of Finding Your Way Through Therapy. Very excited. I've been trying to connect with the following guests for a while now, and then we had scheduling conflicts and everything else, but she has a book out. It's been out for a while, and I know that she told me that there's another one coming out. Here it is for you guys to see it, Overcoming Your Child's Fears of Dogs. I'll be perfectly honest with you. It should say Overcoming Your Fear of Dogs, but I'm sure that we'll bring that up during our conversation. But very, very helpful book. As a therapist, I found it very interesting. As a human being who has a family member who's scared of dogs, fascinating stuff. So Stephanie Cohen, welcome to Finding Your Way Through Therapy.
Thank you. Really, really happy to be here.
I was going to joke with you. I don't know where Fozzie is, but I was expecting Fozzie to be here. But Fozzie's...
Well, that- That would be very interesting because Fozzie is no longer in this world.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I have a new furry friend, the same breed. Her name is Winnie, and right now, fortunately, she's sleeping. But if she hears my husband come home, you will hear her bark.
Right. Well, I'm sorry for Fozzie. I'm sorry for the
Thank
loss.
you.
It's losing a family member. I get
It
that.
is. Yeah.
The reason why I mentioned Fozzie was her, she talks about it across her book.
Yeah. He was a big part of it. He really was.
And seemed like a good dog. So I'm sorry for your loss. I always, whenever someone loses a dog or a cat that they've been attached to for over a year, I say it's a family member who just passed away. So
You're
very sorry for your
absolutely
loss.
right. Thank you.
So I guess we're doing grief counseling today. All joking aside, I know you a little bit because I read your book. We've exchanged a few times. So I'm going to turn around to you and say, tell me a little bit about you and share it with my audience.
Sure. So I am a licensed clinical social worker. I have a practice of working with families and children, many of them who have developmental delays or differences. And aside from that, over the years, I've been very interested in incorporating animals into my practice. I found that when there's a dog laying next to you being stroked, et cetera, a lot of times people are much more open to talking. But that aside, I became interested in, I say cynophobia. I think it's actually cynophobia. It's Greek, but I'm going with cynophobia, the fear of dogs. A number of years ago, my daughter, Becky, age 5, announced she was afraid of dogs and she would no longer go to my mother's house, who had a lovely dog, Bewley. And I did not understand it at all. She had nothing had happened to her that was negative. We loved animals. None of us were afraid. I just didn't get it. And that became my journey to try to figure out how to help her. There were no resources. My sister had a lovely dog named Casey. We had gone to visit her out in California, and Becky was afraid of the dog. And intuitively, she and I helped Becky feel in control and to feel safe. And after the 5-day visit, she was much more comfortable with dogs. And after that, we thought about it. We figured out kind of how we had helped her organically. And then, just in my regular practice or day-to-day life, when I would come across people who were nervous around dogs, I would start to do some of these things that I outline in the protocol. And then one day, I don't know if my sister said it to me, but I said, you know what? I have something here. And I really, really want to share it with people because, as you know, you have a loved one who's afraid of dogs. It really, really impacts not only the person, but the entire family. So a lot of times interviewers will say, what is your regret? My one regret is that I did not do this 20 years ago. I did it, but I should have done it a long time ago. So that's my advice to people. Just do it.
Well, it's not a regret if it's a lesson learned.
Okay, I like that.
Just for the record, that's
Yeah,
how
no,
I,
you're right. You're right. What lessons did I learn? Just do it.
because I think that regrets imply bad stuff. And to me, I tell people there's no, that comes from a artist in Quebec. She had a couple of hits in the 60s, then she got lobotomized.
Oh, wow.
And she came back right before she passed away, and my grandmother loved her. And one of her last interviews, they asked her, "Do you have any regrets?" She's like, "No, I only have lessons learned, and I'm still learning." And I always
I
keep
love
that
that.
in mind because I think regrets are heavy to handle because you can't do anything about it. When you say lessons learned, you kind of let go of what you couldn't control at the
I'm
time.
going to remember that. That's very helpful.
So,
Thank you.
wanted to make sure I said that because I don't want you to have any regrets.
Thank you.
Because it's a really good book, I think it's going to be helpful. And my girlfriend has a pit bull, and a lot of people are like, "Aren't you scared?" I'm like, "Of a pit bull, and especially her? No, not at all, whatsoever." You're like, "Well, what if?" And I'm like, "What if? I'll deal with what if when it happens." It's like It's again the stuff that people are just stuck on with dogs, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah, I find that we're afraid of things we don't understand. So there's a big educational piece. I try to help people learn about dogs. When I work with kids, I call these dog lessons. So that when you look at a dog and their body language, and probably when you look at your girlfriend's dog, you see a relaxed dog, friendly, whatever, as opposed to another dog who might not be so safe to interact with.
Right, and you learn, as the book talks about, look for some of the behaviors, the tenseness of the dog, and so on and so forth. And you don't need to be a genius to know that. Just need to pay attention. But before we go more on the book, because
Yes,
I should
sure.
go, there's a standard question on finding your way through therapy for everyone that comes in, and is, have you ever been in therapy? So that is your question, right?
Yes, I have been in therapy. I kind of feel like every day is therapy, but I was in official formal therapy right after I got out of college. And I had had some loss and never really dealt with it while I was at college. I mean, I full disclosure here, I guess I was dealing with it, but I was acting out and dealing with it in the not healthy way, as
Right.
one does sometimes. And then there, I found myself in New York City going the wrong way towards an escalator. Like I was preoccupied, I was in a fog, I was depressed, and I thought, this is not safe. I'm trying to think. This was before I went to social work school, actually. And I thought, you know what? I need help. And I made the call, and I wasn't in all that long, about a year, but it was incredibly helpful. And I learned a lot. And then I think I also, not surprising, I come from a slightly turbulent family upbringing. So went to social work school to try to understand it in a little way, in a little bit.
Did you figure it out yet?
No.
All right, good. Pretty good.
I mean, I'm being facetious there, but the truth of the matter is, as you said, there's always something to learn, but I reparented myself as I parented my kids, which was incredibly healing. I did it very differently.
The self-healing process is so important. That's what therapy really is about. Having a place where you can talk about it openly so that you can heal yourself. Because, something I probably repeat at every single podcast I have, and I'm going to say it until people believe me, I don't fix anyone. I'll give you good tricks. I'll give you ideas of what to do, but I've never fixed a human being in my life. I'm still fucked up, and I'm still working on fixing myself. So, I want to get back to the book because, you talked a little bit about how you got interested in, Sinophobia? What did we mean?
Well, let's call it cynophobia. And if the
Sinophobia.
grammar police come after us, so what?
Yeah. It's my, you know what? You're allowed as an excuse. This is my second language. So I always tell people I have that excuse in my back pocket anytime I need it.
There you go.
But I wonder how do you help people in therapy with this? Because, I read the book. And, I get systematic desensitization, but I think that people always skip steps when they're doing that stuff. But how do you help people in therapy understand all this stuff and help them get to where they need to be?
So with this kind of therapy, the first thing I do is establish trust with the person without a dog, because when people who are afraid see a dog, they immediately, fight or flight is triggered. I mean, it's a spectrum. Some people are mildly afraid and some are so panicked that they will endanger themselves by running into the street to avoid passing a dog on a leash. So establish trust, because the client has to feel safe with me and to know that they will not be forced to do anything that they don't feel ready to do. Now and then I say, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to nudge you and cheer you and bug you, but you will not be forced. And I'm working with someone now, and lovely, lovely dog, lovely woman. And she keeps saying, what if the dog jumps on me? What if the dog bites me? And I know this dog will do neither. And I say, you know what? If she does, not only am I going to give you all your money back, but I'm going to give you an extra $500.
So
So
you bribe your clients. Good
I
for you.
bribe my clients. Yeah, I motivate them. But the majority of this kind of therapy is done experientially, exposure with a live dog.
Right.
And we go with at the client's pace. We go as slow as we need to, or some people get right through it in one session, honestly. And others, it takes a lot more. I will be honest, after five or six, if I don't feel like there's movement, I will really pause and say, I think we should take a break because I don't think it's fair to keep going if we're not making enough prog or some progress.
And I agree with you. I think that what you mentioned about therapy is so important. What you need to do is a person who feels safe and trusts you will make progress, not because they want to, not because you want to, but because safe and why am I blanking on the other word right now? Being safe and trustworthy is probably where people feel the best, and that's what you're offering, and that's important because people who have a fear of anything, but let's talk particularly of dogs right now. When you talk about dogs, I think that the problem is that people are like, oh, well, we'll fix that phobia and, I'm going to see dogs and all that. But no, ultimately, it's got to be done in trust. It's got to be done in a safe environment. It's got to be done with people who feel good and so on and so forth. And you cannot underemphasize that any type of fear has to be done in that environment.
Yeah, you're so right about that. And my goal, and I tell people this, is I would love for you to love dogs, but my goal is just for you to be in proximity to a dog and not freaking out.
Right. Well, that's what I tell people about spiders.
Okay.
I don't do the dog part, but I had a client of mine who, I cannot shout her out because it's putting her out. But
Okay.
she was afraid of spiders, and there was a she bought a new house, and there was some spiders, and she was scared. And I said, "What are you going to do when your husband's not home?" And what? I'm like, "It's going to happen. There's going to be a spider," and And we talked about how to look at it. We looked at some online. She's online with me, so we looked at fig and then eventually she sends me a picture of a splattered spider, and she's like, "Guess who did that on her own?" I'm like, "Win." Not quite your as good of exposure therapy as you,
Well,
obviously, but nonetheless, I think that that's an important part of making that environment so safe so that they can talk about that.
yes, 100%.
What I love about your book, among many other things, and again, she's not, just for the record, anyone listening to this podcast, I'm not getting a dime from this other than I really believe in the book. A lot of the things that I like, and you can see it's worn, so it's not some like BS thing that I'm saying. You got questionnaires in here, but what's even more important for me is every chapter has at least one right here. We talk about this is a technique, but there's also it's like how did it occur in session with that individual? Can you speak more about these studies in your book and maybe one of your favorites, maybe one that was more challenging or anything like that?
Sure. So some of the feedback that I've gotten from the book, and I did include a bunch of vignettes, and like I have one main case study, but in addition, some examples of the kinds of, they're mostly kids, but who are afraid of dogs and how they came to be afraid. A lot of people, that really resonated with them because so many people think they're the only ones struggling with this, and that is not true at all. It's more common than most people think. One that's not in the book, but my poster child for this is Taylor. I'm allowed to use her name. The first session, she stood by her mother's car. She was 8 and cried for 35 minutes. My sessions are 45, up to 45. And we kept nudging her to get a little closer, a little closer, a little closer. And she got within 5 feet of the dog. The dog, by the way, was laying on a blanket as still as we could keep the dog. And that was the first session. She got 5 feet. And the next time, the next session, I said, Taylor, I want you to remember this feeling because we got to get to it quicker so we can make some progress. And I think at that session, I have a certificate that I give them with some checklists, like pet a dog, be near a dog. I think I've updated it since the book. But for children, it's very motivating to be able to check some, that's it, to be able to check things off. And the first one is just being near a dog. So everybody gets that one. And she moved through these sessions pretty quickly. She got very comfortable with Nico. And the way I work is we start with a very calm, passive, these are all well-behaved dogs, but a very passive dog. And then we move up to a little more active dog. And then we have my dog. And I always say, once you've met Winnie, you can graduate. Because she's a more typical dog that your friend or relative might have. And then what happened was, and you can relate to this with exposure therapy, is I don't know if this was during COVID, I think, but then the winter came and she didn't see dogs. And then after 4 months, she saw a dog and was almost back at square one. So we gave her a couple of booster sessions, and in no time she was doing really well with dogs. So was part of this question the challenges?
If you want to, it's up to you which ones that you want to talk about. Because
Okay.
I think that what you mentioned a few things. I think that for non-therapists as well as therapists, what you got to remember to do with exposure therapy or even in life, if you don't have a reward system, whether it's a certificate or anything else, you're not going to have improvement. And it doesn't matter, like what I think people misunderstand. It's like you don't need to say, "All right, kids, we're going to eat at McDonald's every time you get close to a dog," because that's not a good reward system. I don't like to use food as a reward system
Right, I don't
personally.
either.
But using a reward system that works, and like good job, getting a certificate, a
Right.
sticker, and even a, a high five or something like that's awesome, and overdoing it like almost a coach would. I think that it's important to realize that we have a role to play to encourage. Like, if my kids had a fear of dogs, they absolutely don't. If they got close to a dog, I would be like overly excited for them,
Yep.
almost caricature like. Why?
Right.
Because that's what's going to make them like, "Oh, this is good." And remembering the reward system, I think, is something people tend to forget. And I think that when my client texted me and said, "Look what I did," I could have said, "Oh, I don't want to see that." But I said, "No, that's a great job. See, you can do
Yeah.
it." You know,
Yeah.
she felt,
Positive reinforcement.
and we need to put that into in there, because systematic desensitization is useless without positive reinforcement.
It's true. It's true. And it's interesting because the reward for almost everyone is ultimately a feeling of relief. I worked with a woman, she was probably in her 30s, and she called me and she said, I have a 3-year-old who is starting to be afraid of dogs, but I'm afraid of dogs and I don't want to teach her to be afraid of dogs. So we went over, Fozzie was with me then, and the woman was able to, with a lot of cheering on, she was able to touch Fozzie with one finger. And do you know she burst into tears? Relief. And I mean, I see that a lot. And what's interesting, and you know this, is by facing this fear, it gives you so much confidence that you can do almost anything. So I try to link historically for my other clients that if they were able to go on a roller coaster but had been afraid, they can do this too, to try to channel that bravery, that courage.
You know, I think that that's the other part too, that I think you talk about positive reinforcement, that bravery is key. The first thing I do with, and I don't say it always in these words, but someone who shows up for therapy, I'm like, "Is this your first time in therapy?" And if it is the first time, like, bet that took a lot of fucking guts to do so. And people are like, "Yeah, actually it did." And I'm like, "Great, I'm happy you're here." And that simple reinforcement,
Yep, that's so important. I went to social work school a long time ago, and our very first class, this was before cell phones and probably answering machines, we did a whole role play on how hard it was to ask for help. And so if you answer the phone, it's really important to respond the way you do, which is, yay, I'm glad you're here. I know that was hard.
I was going to make a joke, Stephanie. You said that before cell phones and answering machines, what are you? Were you like 110? You look fantastic. There's been a bit of a answering service for a few years.
Yeah, there have been, but
I just, when you said that, I'm like, wow, you look fantastic. So it's a joke, obviously. And for those of you who didn't see it earlier when I talked about their certificate, she said, there it is. Go to your YouTube channel, you'll see what it is. And I'm sure that Stephanie will also probably share everything. The book is amazing.
I
And
will.
at the end of the day, I think that that's what happens, is that we have challenges even with positive reinforcement, because it's hard, especially in our society. Admitting that you're afraid of dogs is almost unheard of, right? In Westernized culture, what do you mean, the simple, a dog or a cat or a, any type of, I'm personally afraid of snakes, so you may need to do some work with me.
You'll have to find someone else for that.
All right, good. I'm not alone. But no, but I think that that's what it is. It's like, there is challenges that come with that, right? And with exposure therapy, I think that, giving positive reinforcement at the right time, because if you only reinforce one behavior for three straight sessions, that's just not going to work for that person. The person will not be pushed. So, I always talk about positive reinforcement as, if you do, you talk about positive reinforcement, I talk about intermittent reinforcement, so that way you're not expecting it all the time, and when you get it, you're like, oh, this feels great. And anyway, that's a little bit of the challenges that I kind of explain to the therapist, because if you keep on saying yay, 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 it's great to be a cheerleader, but as soon as you don't say yay, you're going to lose them. Is there other challenges that you find with exposure therapy that occur?
One of my challenges is finding the dogs to help me because you need a very well-behaved dog. Therapy dogs are wonderful. And then you need the team and the handler to help. I'm lucky. I have like three or four dogs that are just fantastic until Winnie's ready for prime time. The challenges are sometimes when I'm working with children and the parents want to be my assistants. So I have to kind of manage that. And it's all out of the best intentions, but it's not always helpful. So I've gotten at this point in my career, I'm fairly confident, and I just kind of say, I got this. Let me do my thing. You're paying me. I make a joke out of it. And other times, parents are very, very helpful by encouraging or holding the child's hand to pet the dog. I do have a whole little thing of tips and tricks that I do with children in particular. I have a superhero cape, Captain
Yes.
Positive. And for kids probably 8 and under, if I can get the cape on them, we channel their superpowers. Also, we kind of will, I try to, that's part of why I do the first session without the dog. I try to find out what the kid's interest is. So with Taylor, for example, she was a wonderful gymnast. So we would get her talking about her gymnastic meets. And after about 3.5 minutes, I would say, Taylor, you're standing right next to a dog. So things like that. I mean, honestly, the challenges pale in comparison to the personal reward for me and the rewards that that people get from the relief.
I thought you were a millionaire doing this.
Yeah. I wish. That's
Know,
actually, go ahead.
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's really what propelled me to do the book, not to become a millionaire, but that I can only help one person at a time. But with the book, I mean, people actually have contacted me from all over the world. with the book, other people can do it. And it's particularly helpful, I think, for other therapists who are in a perfect position to follow this method and help people.
Well, I wanted to put out, and for those of you who go to YouTube right now, it's part of her book. I don't know if you can read the top, but the list of learn the do's and don'ts around dogs. And there's a whole list of do's and don'ts. And, when you talk about challenges, I think that your book is also going to help with those who may struggle with, parents want to be helpers, as you said. But I think that sometimes parents helicopter or plow through. And I'm a child and family specialist, actually. That's my I my degrees my degree is in child and family. I see zero children in zero family because the parents were overwhelming to me, and that's my most conservative statement I'll ever make. But having it, like, I would even, this is a good book because when I will use intermittent reinforce not intermittent reinforcement but rather systematic desensitization on anything, I'm going to actually tell people to get this book too, because I say, okay, replace dogs with spiders, or replace, public dogs with public speaking, because I think that there's a lot of things that are also very important. You don't take public speaking and say, oh, I'm very nervous about public speaking. Let me register for four public speaking engagements. And some people do that, and I'm like, that's just going to make you more fearful. I'm scared of dogs. Let's no, we'll bring you to Auntie Jane's house, and we're gonna, her dog is great. Well, then the kid doesn't know that. Even adults don't know that, because you're plowing through what needs to be done on a stage by stage basis. And like you said, some stages, some people do go really fast through all the stages, and some others don't. And being able to kind of like measure that up is so important.
And those are really good points. And a lot of people contact me who have worked with other therapists who have done it kind of from their office and given them homework and things, but have not really facilitated an exact exposure session themselves, which I think makes me a little bit different. And I think that that's part of, pat myself on the back. I think that's what makes me helpful. Somebody called me the other day and said their therapist sent them and their 9-year-old child to a dog park. I said, what? So that's exactly what you're talking about. Way too much too soon.
That's plowing through stuff, and that's absolutely terrible. And
Terrible.
you should applaud yourself, and I can't tap you in the back, but we'll pretend
Thank
here.
you.
I promise. Go to YouTube. I did it. I promise. But the point I wanted to make around that is what I admire about your work there, and what you just said is exactly what I like to do too. I have clients who despise, not hate, despise being in an office. And they'd rather go walk. There's a rail trail right behind my office, and we go for a walk, and we do therapy that way because they want to do it that way. And people are like, well, what if HIPAA, and what if this, what if? No, I met the client where they're at. I had a client who struggled with his ability to be on water. Well, we went to a boat yard, and we did it two or three times until he was able to get on a boat. And
That's
people are like,
fantastic.
you go out of your way for that. I'm like, well, no, it's because you got to meet people where they're at. And if you don't, you're actually disserving the work you do. So yes, please step, we need to pat ourselves in the back because you're meeting people where they're at. And that's,
That's the first, that's the second thing I learned
right.
in social work school. After it's hard to ask for help, meet them where they're at.
The example of meeting people where they're at, a client of mine, I would say probably my fifth or sixth client all time, came in. They're like, oh, Steve, you're gonna work with the hard clients. And he had been arrested, and he came in, and I said, hi, how are you? I'm Steve. And he throws a newspaper. He's like, here, read this, you'll know who I am. And I threw the paper right back at him, like right in his face. And I said, what do I give a fuck what this paper says? You tell me your story. And I think that meeting people where they're at is actually where people really do the hard work and are willing to meet you. And when you say, come on in and come and pet Fozzie. Whoa. How about a picture? How about a conversation? How bad is your fear? Because that's the other part too. When I work with kids, this was my favorite thing to do. And if I can get to that page. Of course, now I can't find it because I want to show it to everyone. But you had a list of how bad's your fear of 0 to 10, I believe. Here it is.
A fear scale.
I think that doing that before you start showing people dogs or going to dog parks or whatever, that's a lot more important than anything else. So again, book is super helpful. I want to make sure, like, I know I'm highlighting a few things. I hope you're okay with that, because I really think it's a great book.
Thank you. Now highlight all you want. It's great. But also just, the fear scale with dogs anyway, you need information. I need to know, is it little dogs? Is it big dogs? What are you exactly are you afraid of? Did something happen? I need information in order to be effective. So some people don't want the dog to look at them. So during the session, we keep the dog's face away from them until they're ready.
I think there's a part of a chapter that talks exactly of that. And I think you said you made Fozzie face the other way. So again, what I really like, what I really want people to do is go get that book and, maybe tell us how to get that book. And you said there's a new book coming out or already out.
It's out. I'll show it. This is the kids' companion workbook to go with. It's kind of the same
Scott,
artwork. It's how to.
And just for the podcast itself, because there's some of it won't see it on YouTube, how to face,
My fear of dogs.
that's the accompanying book to accompanying book activity book that goes with the other book, Overcoming Your Child's Fear of Dogs. So I just want to make sure, because some people will not be on YouTube, so I
No,
want to make sure.
I understand that. So the second book I actually wrote with my daughter, who's a teacher and who was the inspiration for this whole journey. And it talks about empowerment. It has mindfulness exercises. It's actually probably useful for a lot of different fears. But one thing I do want to mention, just as an aside, parents must supervise all interactions with dogs for kids who are really 6 and under, because 99% of bad things that happen with dogs are not the dog's fault. So I just want to put that in there.
Well, what you just said is also a sad statement that we got to remind people that children under 6 have to be accompanied on a regular basis,
There you go.
including when there's other adults, other kids. You just don't go, here's your 5 friends, good luck. Never mind dogs or even cats or any other birds or whatever the pets that people may have. So just sad that we have to actually mention that. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
It's
So
true.
we need to mention it.
Okay.
So where do we get these books?
So these books are available online at Amazon, Barnes and Noble, a few other places. Actually, I'm excited because an online bookstore, dogwise.com, is picking it up. They
Oh,
sell
wow.
all books dog. So it's readily available online. And I'm on Instagram, Facebook. I have a website. I'm not that good with it, but I have one. And I'm always happy to get, I don't mind giving out my direct email if people want to contact me. So it's my name, which is spelled kind of funky because that's who my mother was. Stephanie, Stefani Cohen, CoHenLCSW at gmail.com.
Well, I'll make sure I'll put in the show notes with your link to your website, to your Instagram, and to your book. I'll
Thank
make sure
you.
that's all on there so people can go get it. Again, I'm a big fan. Really enjoyed reading your book. And I think it's going to help a lot of people, including, I think, parents who deal with this and don't know how to do it. So congratulations on being on that website for dogs. That's actually very helpful for a whole lot of different slew of people. So I want to thank you for being on the podcast today. What I would like, what I told you beforehand, before we started recording, I was, she, we, she half laughed, but it's the truth. We'll privately do so, but you let me know where I can send that book so it can be signed. I'll pay for the postage. I don't mind. But this is how excited I am about this book because it was so good and wanted
Thank
to
you
thank you
so
for that.
much. Thank you so much. Really kind. I got to say, this was an ec really great interview, and I hope it will help a lot of people.
My guess is a lot more people are going to tune in because I think a fear of anything, but particularly dogs, is a lot more common than people let on.
I think that's true.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, this was great. Thank you, Stephanie, for a great interview. And this concludes episode 174. For 175, we're going to be talking to Kyle Goodnight. Again, going back to the first responder stuff, Kyle, I've been on his podcast called Elevate, and we're going to talk a little more about the first responder stuff. So I hope you join us then.
Please like, subscribe, and follow this podcast on your favorite platform. A glowing review is always helpful. And as a reminder, this podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. If you're struggling with a mental health or substance abuse issue, please reach out to a professional counselor for consultation. If you are in a mental health crisis, call 988 for assistance. This number is available in the United States and Canada.